Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Passing Dimes. Really excited for today's guest. He grew up in Georgetown, where he played for the Impact and has an OVA silver and a national silver medal from club. He's currently with the Humber Hawks, where he's a four-time OCAA champion and two-time CCAA medalist. Please welcome to the show, Chris Bowen. Chris, thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you, Josh. Really appreciate you having me.
So another Georgetown cat on the show. So I got to know, you guys all have an interesting origin story, and it feels like volleyball was never your favorite sports. It seems like you guys are always playing something else. So take me from the top here. What was just your relationship with sport growing up, and when did you get hooked on volleyball?
Yeah, so starting actually in grade two, I was a huge soccer player. We had a great coach. He was very strict, like when I was eight. So sports started for me during that age, and soccer was my passion, my the end all. I really wanted to become a pro soccer player. I played that for about 7-8 years at a very competitive level. And during that time, I think when I hit grade four, I started playing volleyball in school, strictly in school, just kind of as a fun passion. But it was really, I started to get into volleyball in middle school.
Nice. And take me through that soccer comic, because I find that fascinating. So you're this young athletic guy, and you actually liked a strict coach, like you like somebody who was going to line you guys up. You were going to do very like technical skill work, that you were into that as a young kid.
Well, you have to get into it. We were 8 years old, and he had us running hills in his backyard. He had us playing capture the flag at a very intense level. And we had our assistant coach, who was very quiet, but he was quite technically sound and really wanted us to be precise, right? So we had the motivator and we had that technical assistant coach.
Nice. And in a community like Georgetown, were you playing soccer seasonally, or was it almost year round when you were taking it so serious?
I think starting when I was maybe 11, full year round.
Wow. So as you grew up there, what kind of changed your interest to start looking at other sports, or what got you hooked on volleyball?
Yeah, Georgetown, small community, and I think not a lot of other things to do other than if you were an athlete to play sports. So I played soccer, hockey, volleyball, and then eventually started basketball, but pretty much all four at a high level. At one time being competitive. So I think starting with the multi-sport athlete, over time you had to waver off each sport. In the end, obviously I chose volleyball, but yeah, it was that balancing four sports at once during school was kind of the lifestyle in Georgetown, and most of my peers as well, like Steve Abrams and Josh Mucus and all these guys I've grown up with have been playing multiple sports as well.
Yeah. When you look back, when did you start knocking a few off? Like, obviously you probably played multiple sports in high school, but when did you start focusing on like one or two rep level sports?
I think I had to drop my first one, which was hockey in around, I think, grade seven. Yeah, because they started hitting, and I had two concussions, and my parents had to take me out, because that once that hitting age happened, there were some like goons out there that would just go in for the hitting, right? So there was not really a skill level where previously it was focused on.
Wow, very interesting. So take me through your first couple of years of club volleyball, because yeah, some of the names you just mentioned with Josh and Steven, like, even Steven, who I know very well today, like, I think he's like an absolute volleyball nerd. Even he was playing hockey at a high level. So like, it seems like you guys made this club team, and you guys have such a great friendship till today, but it seems like everybody else also had like a side sport they were doing.
Big time. And there's a ton of notables in Georgetown as well. Not just like Steven, Josh and I, who have been playing youth sports or college for the past few years, but we had Josh Pereira, who is now coaching the U18 Halton Hurricanes. He's not playing at a high level, but he grew up with Steve and I from 12U all the way to 18U, as well as John Dunning, who's the middle for U of T, and a bunch of other friends, because most of us were in French immersion. So we actually we were in French immersion for 12 years from grade 1 to 12. So it was the same core group of people moving along every year in the same classes. And after classes, we'd go to these different sports together. But to your question, when did I start playing club volleyball? I would say around 12.
Nice, nice. And I mean, it is a pretty late entry sport, but with you playing other sports at a high level, what do you think got you hooked on volleyball, that it was going to be your main sport, obviously coming from like a soccer guy and a hockey guy? And you said you got into basketball. Like, when you had to think about it and you narrowed it down, why was this going to be the one for you?
Yeah. It was my middle school coach, Patty Hall. I'm not sure if you know that name, but she was, I think, 4'11". Just an outstanding breadth of knowledge of volleyball. And if you ask any of my friends, they'll tell you that she was the driving factor of why we went down this pathway. We probably don't know it, but I think she was the most dedicated coach we've had probably our whole life, just because of how young of age we were, and to get us that deeply in love with the sport. Because hockey and soccer are pretty compelling sports. But to take these guys and elite athletes to go play a sport like volleyball, she was on a different level.
Sweet. And when you look back, is there an example you can give us just about like where practice is really challenging, where practice is really fun? Like, what were some things that got this group together?
I think we were very detail oriented. I think we were also very focused. But yeah, the practices were fun. Yeah, you had to, in order to continue to play the sport, you had to enjoy what you're doing every night, four times a week on weekends, right? So they were quite fun. And I think it was just the group of guys we had around every year, right? There was no really guys leaving, new recruits. It was kind of just the same core every year. So we got to know each other, become brothers. And that was kind of what made it so much fun.
And take me through, I think it was your 16U year, it might have been your 15U year, but I've heard Steven's explanation of when you guys took down Big Bad Pac-Man, and we just had Tamukas on the show who shared his version, but just explain it to me, because I think that year was pretty special in terms of where, I think Steven said you guys played just enough tournaments to even qualify for provincials, because you guys were all super busy playing other sports. So you play like two Trillium or championship level tournaments, and you go off to provincials and you play one of the best teams in the country and end up taking them down. So just quickly take me through that season and that provincial championship.
Yeah. I think actually we never went down to Trillium. So basically we had a 16U impact team. And then, so Steven and I and Josh Ferrer were playing up a year. So basically we just kind of stayed our age, got another group of friends in. So we played one championship, won that tournament, and then went straight to Premier. And from there, we stayed in Premier, but we probably played maybe one or two more tournaments. And then into provincials, I think I can't remember our pool play, but I believe we did pretty well. We probably could have won it. I can't remember. Maybe lost one game, but it was quite interesting how I think we were down 1-0, because it was best 2-3. So we were down 1-0, and we came back and won in three and beat that, those Pac-Man kids that were notoriously good for just sweeping every tournament, never lose. And yeah.
Now, did you feel any of the hype or any of the story? Like, because you guys were, you know, doing other things on the side, like maybe volleyball wasn't your main thing yet. Like, did you know, was it at stake there? Like, did you know the hype of Pac-Man, or kind of like, I don't understand the big deal. It's just it's a playoff game.
Yeah. The two middles that we brought from playing hockey didn't know it. we brought John Dunning, who was playing as well, AAA hockey, AA hockey. And he didn't really understand that. We had Luke Hubbard. He was another Georgetown neighbor, played hockey, and he didn't understand it. But Steven, Josh, and I definitely understood. That was a big deal.
Nice. And just to jump ahead a little bit, so you guys have a good 17U season, and then 18U really switch it on, where Steve was telling me the other day you guys played Grand Prix finals, provincial finals, and national finals, all against Pac-Man, who would have had Jackson Young and Cole Kaczyszewski and Trent Kaczyszewski, and I'm forgetting some other cats, but just take me through that season where you guys, and believe me, I don't think it was just you and Pac-Man. Like, I think Eric Sixna and Isaac played on the Storm team. Like, Ottawa area was usually pretty competitive. Like, there was good teams, but you always kind of butted heads with this really good Pac-Man team. So take me through your 18U year, because I think that's when you got to work with Mac Robinson, who's one of your coaches now at Humber, right?
Yeah, so I think the biggest part for us was getting two more left sides. So Blake Fenwick, who plays at Western right now, and Noel Campins, who plays at Waterloo. So they're two undersized, left size, but previously the year before, I think we were, that was maybe our limiting factor, our left size. We had a great right side, Nick Gumienic, two great middles and three great middles actually, but bringing those two guys in, knowledge, experience, undersized, but could just jump through the roof. That was put us over the edge. That kind of just, there was nobody really stopping us when you had six core now U Sport athletes, right? Playing on the same court. So yeah, it was a great season. I think Mac didn't really coach us a lot. I think he knew that we had all of our knowledge already, and he kind of just let us have fun at practice, let us play, let us figure things out. And that was kind of his coaching philosophy, because I talked to him just this year after being 5 years, and we constantly talk back to that 18U year, because for him it's a highlight in his coaching career. And he says his philosophy is to let the players figure it out for themselves, rather than being like dictated by a coach. So yeah, through that, I think we were able to, with our close connection, be able to play at a high level.
And take me through just that, because I know it was the culmination of your club career, and you are adding new cats, but it does feel like the team was so tight where the other day at our March break camp, Steve is explaining to the kids that, like, you know, winning is fun, like chasing medals, like trying your best. That stuff's fun. And we had like Leah Monkos there showing off her national championship ring from the NCAA. But what Steve explained his 18U team, and he's just like, we didn't win one gold medal, but I'm still best friends with all those guys. And he's like, I know that Pac-Man team for a fact are not best friends and they're not close. So like they won three big tournaments, we finished second, but he's like, I have lifelong friends and they don't. And that's like the experience that he chases and really craves. So I just wondered, in your own words, did you kind of feel something similar, or would it have been nice to get those gold medals, or are you just, you're best friends with these guys and you will be telling these volleyball stories for the next 40 years probably?
That's exactly it. Steven put it perfectly. And we grew up together, so we knew that lifelong friendship, no matter how decorated we are as an athlete or athletes, it doesn't matter. We're all there together. We see each other every maybe fourth weekend when we come home from our respective universities. And that's exactly it. And honestly, I think the guys that came in really bought into our culture, and they were, that's what made even still the guys that were there for 1 year great friends for life.
And take me into your 18U year. So obviously you're working with Max, so maybe he's got the inside edge if you were going to pursue Humber or were interested in any of the programs. But like you said, with the other U Sports and CCAA athletes on that team, was there anything else you were pursuing in terms of volleyball for the future, or were you locked in on Humber pretty quickly?
I was locked in on Humber in November, so I guess that's pretty quickly. But honestly, I was looking at Western and different areas, and then I think what really compelled me was the program for kinesiology at University of Guelph Humber. That's what kind of got me tied into going to Humber, was the program. I was quite motivated to go into kinesiology of some sorts, and I found out that it had a very practical part of the program in 4 years, with getting a diploma and a degree in 4 years. And it was, I think that's what really compelled me. And then also Max's coaching style. I enjoyed how he was very like quiet, but also very intelligent. He knew what to say at the right time. He knew like not to say anything at sometimes when we were on the court, because sometimes the coaches don't need to say anything and the players need to figure it themselves, especially when you have a lot of athletes that are quite knowledgeable in the sport since they were young, right? And yeah, those two things really brought me together to Humber. And the last thing I'm going to say about going to Humber is I didn't know that our coach from 12U to 16U was actually the women's head coach of Humber women's volleyball. So I finally put it all together that I've been coached in a Humber philosophy for, I was 12 all the way till now I'm 23, right? So I've had three different coaches of the Humber culture, and it's been, I've been breeded through that community.
Amazing. Amazing. It's so cool to hear. So when you committed in November, did you do a visit? Did you go to a practice with the squad? Like, did you get to meet any of the guys before you arrived there for your first day class the next year?
Yeah. Mac took me out to practice. And even before that, actually, Dave Hood was the women's coach. He took me out to practices when I was 14, 15, 16 every year. So I would say one practice a year I went to. So I knew the college. But that first practice and the first signing when I went there, Jake Gomes, who is now playing overseas, and Rezert Sudoku were the two main vets who greeted me and really just gave me a home in the Humber community. And that first practice was very nerve-wracking, but also I felt very comfortable at home with these guys.
And what were some first impressions there? Because we used to go to the Humber tournament early on when I coached at George Brown, and I used to joke with the other college coaches that, like, man, I don't even go here, and I'm getting a sense of pride because Humber does the athletics facility, like, so well that everybody has a picture, there's banners everywhere, championships are in plain sight. Like, you know you're in the athletic department when you walk in that door. So I'm just wondering, what was your first impression? Because I think sometimes we knock colleges because they just don't have the funding or the atmosphere that universities do, but I think Humber is as close to getting it right in terms of, like, you feel special being an athlete there, and I was never an athlete there. I just walked down that hallway a lot.
And that's so true, Josh. Like, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I'm very fortunate. I just wrote an email yesterday, 2 days ago, kind of debating the backdoor bronze in the CCAA Nationals. I was not too happy about that. But I wrote an email to my athletic director and just said at the end of the email, I'm so fortunate I chose Humber College because the athletes are treated so well. There's a lot of expectation on the athletes too, right? You're putting in 5 days a week of practice. You have to go to your workouts. Like, there's quite a bit of expectation. So with that expectation comes that privilege. But yes, I agree. Like, it's incredible how they treat their athletes with respect to social media, banners. I would say almost like athletic therapy, physio as well, mental wellness coaches, strength coaches. You got your doctors in there. So they treat it quite like a youth sports or Division I school.
And with your entry, I know you can play libero, but I think a lot of people, when they hear your name, think of your setting, first of all, especially from your club days. Were you basically in charge of running the second side in training and making things really hard? Did you feel like you kind of had an opportunity to challenge? Because when you got there, it felt like Jake was already pretty established, and I think he might have been third or fourth year by the time he checked in. So, I mean, obviously they're confident with him, they're winning with him. So just take me through that first year of what you felt like your role was and what were you adding to the environment?
Yeah. Wayne always talked about how that, we like to call it bench mob. So those bench mob guys that are doing all the antics on the sidelines, but we're there to push that starting group. And he's a big philosophy guy on like vets get to play, right? It's when it's their turn, they've waited their turn to play. So for me, my role was to push Jake as best I can. I had the talent, but also I was still getting used to the environment of post-secondary school and athletic balance. So that's not easy as in itself. So I guess that also took my mind off some things and directly to the actual sport. It's about pushing those veterans to work at their hardest and having somebody right behind them saying, hey, if you either are not putting in the work or you get injured like Jake did in the first month of the season. So the first month of the season, I played the entire preseason because he was injured. So that was my role, and Wayne laid it out pretty clearly to me in September.
And give us a little inside edge here, because I think one thing that Wayne does well, and Mac and Hank and the other guys there, is Humber will get some big recruits like yourself who are like a club level medalist, but then they'll also get somebody you've never heard of, and within watching them in 5 minutes, you're like, wow, this guy's going to be legit. And it's like the Josh Vardaris, no offense, Josh, but like, I know he played club, but like he popped off in college, and there just always seems to be a unicorn coming out of Humber. So just explain to me how in practice things can be competitive and we're talking about winning, but there's also like a lot of teaching and instruction. So these unicorns can like catch up and get really, really good, really fast.
Yeah. And you explained it so perfect. I was going to bring it up. I was thinking about that yesterday as well, but yeah, we have our 6'10 Jazz Gronkowski out of Pac-Man B, right? Probably a pretty skinny kid coming into college, but just all the amenities of having a high-performance program, therapy. We have a very technical coach in Hank Ma as well. So Hank's not a very loud guy, or he doesn't try to be, but he's very technically sound. So behind the scenes, other than Wayne's motivation, he does a lot of the technical background skill work, giving everybody a base. But like you said, again, we have a lot of tall guys, to name a few: Colin Skeynes, Andrew Blakey, and Max Crowder. These guys were all above 6'7", and really never played club volleyball. And Wayne and Hank recruited them, and they somehow just put the time and effort into focusing on their skills. And over the course of the year, they really show up in the collegiate league.
And for your development, are you kind of just thinking in terms of like, I want to play and I'll do whatever it takes? Or are you a team first guy? Like, were you excited to learn a new skill? Because I'm sure you did dig and pass a lot, but when you're on a club team with Abrams and you're the best setter, I imagine you guys got specialized in your skills pretty quickly. But when did the libero opportunity kind of enter the conversation? And were you excited to kind of get those service receive reps that you were probably hundreds, if not thousand reps behind from your club career? Because I imagine you set your whole club career, right?
Well, I said since I was 7, I wasn't allowed to do anything else. Right. Like I was talking about my middle school coach. I probably asked her every practice, can I hit? She said, no. And so she was quite adamant of me just strictly staying to my abilities. And I'm thankful for that, because I believe that those reps at a young age helped me when I became 17 or 18. But yeah, I think I was able to say whatever I can do to get on that court, I will do. I was pretty interested in learning a few setting skills from Wayne, because he was a setter back in college as well. So I was trying to pick up some new skills. But for me, playing behind Jake, it's a lot of the height as well. And I knew I was talented, but also watching him play at that height and his skill level, I knew that he was well deserving of that spot, and it shows up over the course of his 5 year or 6 year career that he was just an outstanding player. And then switching to libero, it was that second year when COVID, everything shut down, and I was putting in the work in the gym in the off season. I was asking Wayne and Hank, and what do I have to do to get on the court? And we had just lost Raddy Kim, our libero. And I knew that a few coaches in the past had told me that you'd be a great libero, including that middle school coach. And I thought, why don't I give this a try? So that whole summer, I worked on just hopping in the service receive reps. And to be fair, it was actually almost love at first sight. Like it was quite cool how I was able to just get in there and know what to do. Because I'd watched Steven for my entire life, right? I watched him. Every ball that he passed to me, I was setting. So it was just constant watching what he was doing. And I was able to pick it up quite fast. And we were able to take a team to a national semifinal in my first year being libero. So that was quite cool.
And if it's not too personal, take me through the scenes here, because I liked your comment earlier about how Wayne and the coaching staff's pretty loyal to the vets and they want them to do well. So you're plugging away, you're falling in love with the libero position, but man, can you still sling it? But then a guy like Josh Nicholson calls and says, hey guys, like I'm done at Nipissing and I want to come to Humber. Like right away, were you like, oh, excited, like you can play libero again? Or were you kind of like, I'm going to fight this guy for the position? Like what was the mood around when you saw that Josh was going to be on campus?
Yeah, that's coming up to this year. I was I was actually actively recruiting him for the whole summer. I watched him, like him and I competed against each other. He got the spot at Teemo in what 16U, and I never went to Teemo at all. So I was watching him his whole career, and I just loved the way he sets. So it's quite unique. It's different. He has that nine man type of velocity where he can maybe hold the ball a little bit longer and sling it after that. But I was actively trying to pursue him, and I knew that if we had that last little piece of the puzzle of a setter, because we lost our big gun in Jake, and I knew that we would be quite competitive this year. So I wasn't trying to go back to setting as much as I love it. I knew that we would have a great team if he was able to come.
And again, take me behind the scenes here. So you've been on, you've won an OCAA conference championship every year you've played, but man, does each year tell a story where there's years you were undefeated. There was years you guys lost games in the first semester and it's like, oh, here we go. And then you guys figure it out. This year, I had to double check it when I saw the post for your playoff schedule, and you guys were playing on the road. And I don't remember Humber going on road trips in the East-West crossover very often. For reference for our listeners, that means you finished fifth in your conference this year, right? So there's each championship just kind of tells a different story to me. So I'm wondering if you could tell us, is there any similarities in terms of how the team preps and how the team talks, or honestly, does every year kind of have its own thing?
I truly believe it starts from the top. So our coaching staff doing an outstanding job in no matter what the circumstances, preparing for that adversity. And Wayne's motivational speaks or preparation speaks before either a big match where you have to prepare, you have the whole week to prepare, or even before that match, he just knows what to say at the right time. And we had the mantra being road warriors. We have no pressure on us. He called it lowly 5th seed in the West. He even used that in the national before the national semifinal. Just that lowly 5th seed in the West. We had nothing to lose. But we know that in deep down we have guys who have been here before and know how to prepare our minds to just psych yourself up for that game. But yeah, I agree. Being a 5th seed is not easy, but we were able to go into each game prepared, knowing what our role is, doing our job of each player, just doing their job, and everything will come together. But I think the semifinal and final, we were down 2-1 both times, and I think we were able to claw ourselves back. And that has a test to coming fifth, because the whole year we were losing five setters. Like we were facing all these challenges of not pulling that fifth set out. And I think over time we were able to learn from that, and it came together in the playoffs.
Yeah, so you go to George Brown, you take that down. You then play Conestoga, who had a very big regular season and has a couple of really good players, but you take that 3-0. And then what I consider one of the best rivalries, I almost skipped over it. Then you beat a very good Centennial team who's got that Cuban cat, and you beat them in five at Centennial. And then you play the final. Pardon? And then you play Fanshawe, and I would consider Fanshawe at Humber one of the best rivalries in the last, if it's not a decade, it's pretty close in terms of men's volleyball. It seems like you guys always cross paths in a meaningful game. So was there just general excitement every week? Because I know the OCAA changed the format, so it wasn't a final eight. Like, you actually had time in between each matches, and you had to prep and you had to recover. So were you guys just playing with house money that you're kind of like, oh, we played an away home game, like every game is just fun at this point? Or were you guys really gearing up and talking like championship?
Yeah, we're always gearing up talking championship. That's always the expectation for every team at Humber. Like, if you don't get that championship, it's kind of a bust, right? So that's the Humber mentality. It's always you set your eyes, or you always set your eyes on the prize, and you always try to peak at that right time. Always gearing up for that championship, and you can't go wrong with the Humber Fanshawe rivalry. It was so much fun. Great game at their house. We'd done it the year before. They hosted the year before, and we came in there, beat them in five as well. So kind of just a repeat of a year, and it's like when they come in and win your home opener 3-1, they come to your house in the home opener and win 3-1, and then the rest of the year we beat them every time. That's pretty, we know we've learned something as a group, and we know we've adapted to either our struggles or adversity through that first half of the season.
And I mean, as a coach, I love game planning, but I also love just sitting back and watching a match and just knowing that, like, if your best players don't play their best players, we're going to have success. But what did that Humber match feel like in terms of, like, Admins was going to get a ton of chances. Riddings and Pinot were going to get a ton of chances. And you guys were going to ride. Obviously, you wanted to get Max and the other middles involved. But, like, we knew Marcus was going to get a ton of touches. And we knew Taven was going to get a ton of touches. So, like, is there a certain point where the game plan kind of goes out the window? You kind of know what to expect. And it's just, like, our horses versus their horses.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly it. And when it comes down to, you both won two sets. In that fifth set, you just play, you just ball out. You play your game. You have all three hitters, and it's just whoever can sustain that high level throughout that fifth set is going to pull it out. But I think our strength this year was in the middle, so we really capitalized on getting Max and Jaskar and those balls at the very beginning, and then Marcus, who has a 40-inch vertical, he's always our outlet, jumps, just jack the ball up. Josh is able to jack the ball up to the pin, and just he's able to pick his shots. But I was really proud of our left sides this year, like Taven and Kyle Gray Phillips. Those two, like, played outstanding, even though they weren't the main guys. They were quite level-headed the whole year and quite proud to pass beside them. And they had an outstanding tournament as well.
And I find conference play very interesting because you get rivalries and you get used to people, and there's a lot that goes on in the OCAA, but Nationals brings about it some different distractions. So I'm glad the OCAA finally uses the ball, because it used to be like you got like a week to practice with the ball before you go to Nationals. But there's so much distractions in terms of, like, where are we traveling to? What's our seeding? And I'm sure everybody looks at the bracket and goes, oh no, someone should be there and we're there. And, like, how do you seed this thing? Because there's so many conferences and so many good teams. And then I'll stay off my soapbox, but there are conferences out there that will have a 26-year-old foreigner who I don't know how they're in their fourth year of general arts, but they're really good at volleyball and you're going to have to play them. Where, to me, that's not the spirit of school sport, but again, I'm off my soapbox where there's just some really good volleyball players. So how do you guys look ahead and prep for a tournament like that? This is going to be tough. Like, there are no easy matches, and I know our listeners can save their easy jokes about the East Coast team that comes, but I think they're a very good team and it's not a free win. But what's that draw like? What's the distraction? How does Wayne kind of handle it so you guys aren't talking about, like, oh, I can't believe that you know, the ACAC is ranked here and we're ranked here? It's like there's so much to get annoyed with that you just have to focus on your own thing, right?
Exactly. So this year it was a little bit different because we just won provincial, so we weren't really worried about the seeding. We knew that we were going in Ontario one, which is great. But for us, it was primarily beating that Mosin team that came into our house, cut down our net the year before in the national final. So that was our primary first goal, because that was quite upsetting to lose a national championship at home in front of a packed stadium. So that was our primary goal, and we ended up going there, beating the 3-1, which is amazing, and we felt accomplished. And then from there, we were top four in the country. So you think, because of the backdoor bronze, you may not actually make that top four, but that's another story. Just going into the national semifinal, we thought we had a great draw going into the tournament, playing ACAC winners Nate Ooks. Big team, a lot of power. I think their defense wasn't always on point, but during that game they really stepped it up, and they were pounding serves at us, just pounding balls at us. We got behind 2-0 pretty quick, 25-16, got crushed. But because of all year, we were battling, and we actually were able to know that we weren't out of it the whole way through. So we clawed our way back again, like our team did all season. We clawed our way back to a fifth set, and we were up 6-2. Then we were tied 7-7. We were tied 8-8, tied 10-10, tied 12-12, tied 13-13, and just couldn't pull out those last few points. We lost 16-14 in the fifth set. But it was just an outstanding atmosphere and match, and they ended up winning the championship. So kudos to them. But yeah, it was a great game, and very fun experience in Victoria, British Columbia.
And take me through the side change after the second there, because I think you drop 25-16. There's maybe some people in the crowd who are thinking like, oh, this could be like an hour and shower. Like that was pretty smooth there. Like, whose voice is loudest? Are you guys panicking at all? Are you gathering intel and you're kind of like, oh, this looks different than it did on video, or these guys are a little bit faster than it felt? Like, what are some of the conversations for you guys to be able to claw your way back? Because yeah, great memory with the set score. So both 16, but then you win 20, win 19, and drop it 16-14. But whose voice is the loudest? Is anyone panicking? Like, what are those conversations?
We were definitely panicking, for sure. Like, we were definitely panicking. Anybody would be down to nothing. However, we knew from experience all year, we were, like, our best time was going to our fifth set. Like, we'd lost so many of them that in the playoffs and OCs, we were able to come back and win them. So we knew that we had a chance. We had, I think, 4 fifth-year vets, as you would think, like Kelsey, Crowder, myself, and then Josh Nicholson, obviously, is a great vet. And we knew collectively that we just had to go and keep playing, like just not give up, because we had the talent and we had a great team that we were able to come back. And obviously our coaching staff has their way with their words, which they're always like amazing, spectacular. They always know what to say at the right time. But like in the group, we were able to go in there and do our job and sustain a 2 hour and 40 match, like 2 hours, 40 minute match. So it was a marathon, but it was a fun one.
So you mentioned twice there the backdoor bronze that the CCAA runs. And I mean, I could probably live on both sides of the fence where I don't like it. I don't think it's high performance. I think it's odd to add an extra match there. So for our listeners, if you lose in your quarter, you can play another team who lost in their quarter. And it basically turns like the bronze medal into a double elim format. So with you guys dropping your semi, you're actually playing a team that was waiting for you. You didn't play VIU right away for the bronze medal game, which I thought was strange, but I could see maybe some athletic directors being like, college has a little bit more turnover than university. So it's not the spirit that we're just going to play our twos and get experience for that like fifth place game. So the losers of the quarterfinals need something meaningful to do, or hopefully not disappear and drink and wreck the hotel room. Like, I could maybe see those arguments, but if we're talking high performance sport and we're talking what's best for everybody, I would rather see, if you win your quarter, you play for a medal. But what are your thoughts or just processes? As a guy who's been through this a couple times.
Yeah, I've actually played in 2 bronze semifinals. One I won this year, and the last one I actually didn't win. In Quebec, 2 years ago, we had a shortened season, half season, and we ended up playing Limoilou in the semi. We were actually up 2-0 with like Fedari, Jake, all those guys were up 2-0 against Limoilou, and they crawled their way back for the reverse sweep. So that was heartbreaking. And the next day we had to play an Ontario team who we'd beaten all year. We beat 25-8 in the final at provincials. We beat 25-10. Like, we played our bench because we thought we could maybe take them on with that, but we were all dead, right? We couldn't sustain that. Next morning, get up, go and play again after losing a 5-setter against Limoilou. From my point of view, and especially this year, which as well, I didn't quite like the format because we had to play another Ontario team who we played all year. Like, we played Fanshawe in the bronze semifinal for nothing. Like, we really weren't playing for anything at that time. And we were playing to get into the bronze medal match, but who really wants to be in that game after losing your hopes and dreams of becoming a national championship, right? But 2 times, 2 Ontario teams, 1 I've won, 1 I've lost. But in that respect, being top 4 in Canada, making the semis, and then actually not actually being ranked top 4 because you have to play another game to either be in the bronze or go to play for 5-6, I don't like it personally. But I can see how if you have a tough draw and the seedings aren't matched up correctly at the very beginning of the tournament and you lose that quarter, you still have a chance. I can see how that's great. Just from my point of view, making the semis every single year I've been at college, like, I've been in college probably 4 years of playing volleyball. I've made the semis every year. Two I've won, two I've lost. Going to play that bronze semi is not something I want to do after losing a tough 2 5-setter semifinals.
Yeah, it's such an interesting take. And I mean, they add in the off day, I think, now to allow for more matches. I don't know. I don't know the perfect answer. I just think win your quarter, play for a medal would be my philosophy. But anyways, I digress. The other thing I had in my notes here that I wanted to ask you about is just the demands of the setter position and the demands of the libero position, where I think a lot of coaches would probably think the setter needs to be like super competitive, set the guy who's going to score. You're paying attention to all the matchups. You're being very like tactical, where I think a lot of people like their libero to be like chill and pretty calm and steady. And you're almost like a goalie where if you make a mistake, it's like, yeah, that's okay, but we need to bounce back, because if you get in your own head, like we're all in trouble here. So how have you found like the demands? Like, have you been able to find a code for you to feel like you're still competitive and influencing the match without being like a freak out because you are the first contact guy instead of the second contact guy now?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. For me, I still try to take charge like I was a setter. So it's hard for me to switch my brain over from being that captain or role model on the court as a setter and then now transition to libero. So I have found that in this past year that being a bit more even keeled, calm as a libero is the way to go. Basically, we do a double substitution of, we have a defensive lib and a servicey lib. And my partner, Alex Seggy, he's so calm. Like he is just kind of the ideal libero in terms of your persona, your mentality on the court, just does his job, digs balls and gets off the court. Whereas for me, I still try to take charge and direct around the court as I would as a setter. So it was a bit of a different switch, but yeah. And honestly, some setters are still pretty quiet. Some setters just do their job. Like Josh is not really a loud guy, but when things are going wrong, he gets on you. Like he'll let you know that we need to wake up, and that's why he's still at the highest level. He knows when it's the right time to get on the guys.
And with Wayne and Chris both coaching the programs there, I mean, we're chasing a lot. Chris's record of how many you can go in a streak is pretty impressive. But do you think they ever talk about that, where Wayne's creeping up now that he's got 4 in a row? Like, have you guys already started talking about next year? Like, when you start streaking like this, is it tempting to start looking ahead? Or does, like, you have to rein the guys in and say, no, this is different. Guys are graduating. We got new guys in. The league changes. The OCAA has a high turnover rate. Like, the teams can load up in a hurry, right? So I'm wondering, how do you feel like this? Are we starting to chase down Chris and the women's Humber team's record? Or are we just going one at a time here?
I think it's one at a time for Wayne. I think he likes that. But obviously, I saw a post of he posted maybe a week ago. He had 5 incoming or something like that. So he's obviously looking at that side of things. But and obviously, our rookies are too. Our rookies were amazing this year, and I think they have very high potential and very good careers ahead of them. So I'm excited to follow them throughout their careers. But I do think there is some sort of discussion amongst the brothers with that, yeah.
And have you found your roles changed at all as you progress and become more of an upperclassman with the squad? Like, do you find you participate more in discussions, or you do little things at practice, or have you been like the same cat? Like, it's naturally to think that like you came from such a competitive sport background and you probably knew what you were doing, but I think post-secondary sport's just different. So I'm wondering how you feel like your career's progressed as you've gotten older.
Yeah, and at Humber, Wayne, for the volleyball team, we have a leadership council. So we don't really have captains per se. We have 5 or 6 guys who are part of that leadership council, and you bring in one rookie every year. So you have one rookie on that leadership council. I think I was that rookie in my second year. I think I was kind of coming into that leadership council pretty quick. But so over time, and he expects a lot of you. So that leadership council, if things aren't going well, it's all the blame is on you. Nothing else is on the team. So those 5 or 6 guys have to work together. And we get harped on a bit after every practice. He brings us 6 in and he tells us what he expects in the week going forward, or what we did wrong and what we have to improve on. So I think my role has changed and my mindset has grown over the past few years of being on that council. And I think this year came together and we finally brought a team that went 13-5 to win 6 straight playoff games and almost come to a national final. So,
and if it's not too personal, do you mind sharing a couple conversations that go on at a leadership council? Because when I was a young man taking over the George Brown program, Wayne and I were already friends and we knew each other through the OVA. And I asked him a couple questions and he goes, some stuff you kind of have to predict and you got to pick the hills you want to die on. And he's used the example where you guys ref the Humber Club tournaments, right? And he goes, I will bet you anything you want between dollars and donuts that someone's going to sleep in or someone's going to be late and they're going to miss their fishing duties. Like, and I'm going to have to deal with it. And that's something that I've predicted and we've got our leadership group in place. And I thought that was fascinating that he's just like, not that he was planning for bad stuff to happen, but he's so experienced and knows the group so well that he's just like, it happens all the time. So I am wondering with the creation of this leadership group and having you guys be accountable to each other, like, is that something he would go to the group with or what are some of the conversations happening with the leadership squad who are our guys on the team?
Yeah. And it was a great case this year. Like this year, we were not working together. So the 6 guys, we were kind of straying away from our own lives and then our own kind of probably worrying about school a bit more than sports. So we were in September, we were kind of individuals and he was not liking that. Like he said, you can't have that. So slowly but surely over the course of the year, we had to kind of face our fears and get together as one. And we had tons of chats about either straying players, not showing up to practice on time, not warming up with the team, doing that stuff. So we had to come together as a 6 core group who may have different views on the team, but we had to come together and have a collective output.
And again, if it's not too personal, don't share anything on the internet that you're going to get in trouble for. But can you give me an example there? Because I think one buzzword in the sports psych world right now is just the importance and the value of calling guys in, not calling guys out. So when somebody's not pulling their weight or they are kind of laissez-faire or they're the late guy or they're making the bus wait on them, like how is that addressed? Because I imagine yelling and screaming isn't the outcome you want, that guy might actually quit the team versus like how do you bring them in and explain like the value and the accountability without like embarrassing them or making it like a blame statement.
Yep. And many practices, either my voice or Jazz Phone's voice, we would say, hey guys, bring it in, like not directing at one person. And if they didn't bring it in, I think Wayne heard us say it. And if they didn't bring it in, he would get on them. So it's kind of, if they're not listening to us, he steps in and uses his voice. So, And honestly, it works with it like not accountability, but we have to be put, like as the best. We have to be putting in the work outside of the court for them to trust us. So it's all about really trust. If they don't trust us, they won't bring it in, or they'll be lazy. They'll be that. So I think trust is the one word.
Well, man, this has been awesome. And I do appreciate you sharing not only your journey, but some behind the scenes stuff there, what a championship caliber team looks like in the OCAA here and a national silver medalist there. But one tradition we've built into the show is just to share a funny, unique story. So I was hoping you could give us a laugh before we let you go.
So with Humber, I had the opportunity to be traveling to Amsterdam my first year and San Diego. I think when we were in Amsterdam, we celebrated New Year's, and there were some great times on that. So it was the tournament was the week of, and New Year's was a Saturday. So we finished all our plan, and we were able to celebrate New Year's in Amsterdam, and just traveling the streets and dancing in different stores. Like this, there were songs on, just dancing in different stores, and me as a rookie having my bets just let loose was kind of a very, very enjoyable part of that experience. And there's no specific funny instances, but I have many fond memories of going to Amsterdam and San Diego, that just a whole bunch of laughs and great memories with my teammates.
Awesome, man. Awesome. It seems like whatever team you're part of, you're making lifelong friendships, which I think is so cool and I'm pretty envious of. So thanks for coming on the show and letting us kind of share in your journey a little bit and getting some behind the scenes. Really appreciate you taking the time tonight.
Thank you so much, Josh. Yeah, thank you.